it's ready.
No, as I think I was saying, it seemed to me that it was a good rule in diplomatic negotiation that if you start as a result of oral discussion, if you start reaching some sort of agreement, it's a good idea to get it down on a piece of paper to make sure everybody recognizes the words that have been used and that the meaning is clear.
I want to move on now back to the UN and start with a question. In his book, Mr. Selwyn Lloyd suggests that he had thought of the idea of UN forces possibly being used in the canal and had articulated this in a statement he made in the House of Commons. Do you have any recollection of that? This would have been before Lester Pearson's initiative.
Whether it was before or not, I don't know, but certainly Selwyn had great hopes that Lester Pearson would successfully launch the idea of peacekeeping. Who had the idea first? I don't think my view is a very valid one, but certainly quite early on, Selwyn was keen on the idea of getting a UN peacekeeping force and keen on encouraging Lester Pearson to launch it.
And there were then consultations between the Canadian side and the British government before the actual resolution was put forward by Pearson.
I'm not sure about government negotiation on that, no. But certainly personal between Lloyd and Pearson, yes. Mm-hmm. At the General Assembly meetings.
Because there was rather a close relationship between Selwyn Lloyd and Lester Pearson.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Did, in the case of, in the course of these consultations and the contacts, did the question of Commonwealth solidarity play an important role?
Yes, I think so, certainly.
Lester Pearson apparently had a fear that the Commonwealth was going to be very negatively affected if the crisis continued. Is that accurate?
Yes, I'm not sure that that was the predominant influence in British policy after the failure of the military force. It's certainly a factor, yes.
Because that's exactly my next question. What were the major factors in the British decision to withdraw from the command?
Well, I think, first of all, deep disappointment that the action had not been understood in the United States and indeed been actively opposed. Secondly, the economic pressures which developed and which the United States played a role became quite serious. I do not think that the note from Bulganin played any very great role. I think it was the realization that there was not going to be support from the United States, that since the action had not been quickly successful and been accepted in the United States, the opposition in Britain was going to be more and more vociferous against it. And that led fairly quickly to the difference between the British and the French over ceasing military action. And that the French would have wanted to go on. British commanders, I think, having got involved, would have wanted to go on, but I think Eden felt that he'd been badly let down, or rather, couldn't really say let down, but that he had been greatly disappointed, that Eisenhower, as he would have said, had let him down, and that he felt that he couldn't continue.
And when the final decision was made to withdraw, at least according to Kino's account, the British side did not give the French advance notice. So why was that?
They didn't have any advance notice themselves. We all fixed up in the telephone conversation in the middle of the day. It was lunch.
I see.
No, I think Eden felt that he'd got to stop. The pressures were coming so strongly from Washington that he'd got to stop.
With or without French?
He'd got to stop first. Well, I mean, he knew perfectly well if he stopped, the French would stop as well. The French were not powerful enough to carry on their own.
Now, in this connection, to what extent was Eden's health a factor as perceived by Selwyn Lord? Was there any point where decisions had to be made primarily by Selwyn Lord, or was Anthony Eden totally in charge?
If we're talking about the beginning of November,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that there was any indication at that time that his illness had anything to do with it. I think it was in the end of November, wasn't it, that he was ill and went off to Jamaica, was he?
Yes, but there's some indications that his health was not good earlier than that.
Oh, he had these operations. Yeah. But I don't think it was apparent at the end of October or early November. I wouldn't have thought it was apparent to Selwyn Lloyd that Eden was a sick man.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go further than that. That Eden's judgments were being affected by his health.
That's exactly the question I was asking. That was not a factor. Now, to go ahead to Pearson's initiative in proposing a peacekeeping force be established and the establishment of a peacekeeping force, Dodd Commerschel then was the next one to have extensive conversations with Nasser about the peacekeeping force and the conditions under which it would be there. Were you on the British side, was Selwyn Lord conscious of and concerned about the arrangements that were being made by Dodd Commerschel for the presence of the peacekeeping force?
I have no recollection about that. I don't see why he should have been concerned. I mean, once they decided to abandon the attack, it was almost any way out.
Mm-hmm.
That was an obvious one. I don't think it was going to be preserved. I think there was disappointment that British forces were to be excluded.
Mm-hmm.
Peacekeeping was new, and the idea that people who had the force were not to be part of a peacekeeping force was difficult to accept, but it was evident that it had to be accepted.
At this point, then, the British did not play a very prominent role in New York, is that correct? Whereas Pino actually participated in the arrangements for the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza and Sharm el-Sheikh, but the British side was not involved in this, is this correct?
I have no recollection. I mean, I should be. I might be insane now.
I think probably not. I just have one other question, and this is a broader spectrum question. All of this happened at the same time as the Soviet action against Hungary. And did the developments in Hungary play any role at all in the calculations and the perceptions of Selwyn Lord as one advanced in the action against Egypt?
No. The action was already launched. Suddenly it was found that this was happening in Hungary, but really he and the country generally was too preoccupied with what was going on in the canal to be able to do anything about Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
If they could have done anything about Hungary. I think there was one day in the Security Council or General Assembly debate that was set aside for Hungary in the middle of the Suez crisis. That it was a thing that had to be done, but nothing much came out of it, nor could come out of it. No, it seemed at the time a regrettable sideshow, but I don't classify it as that now.
those are the questions that I had to pose. I just would like to ask finally if there's any other particular impression or thought that has stayed with you of the actions of the main protagonists in this crisis that you would like to put down on this record.
Inevitably, I think subsequent situations that have arisen, I've tended to compare them with the Suez affair. It is what, 2 years later, was it, that the United States forces were actually involved in Lebanon. And I think that was the first time, really, that the forces had really come in to influence things in the Middle East. Up to then, I think U.S. policy had been one of trying to solve Middle East problems by counseling rather than by exerting force. But in a couple of years' time, the U.S. was beginning to do it. I suppose the difference was that the Middle East problems have developed over the years in such a way that the U.S. has found that counseling is not enough over that time. Inevitably, one compares it with the present situation over Iraq. And as you said earlier, there's always a tendency to compare these people with Hitler. I suppose it is because the United Nations has become much more able to act as it was originally intended to act, as a result of the Soviet Union ceasing to be an aggressive competitor that has enabled the UN to become effective. And therefore the Kuwait crisis has been dealt with in quite a different way. First of all, there was an open build-up of sufficient force to be able to do the job. And that open build-up was not possible in 56. It had to be done more or less surreptitiously. And even the pretext that was hit upon was not sufficient to cloak it. Whereas the intention and the aim over Kuwait has been much more clearly stated from the start. I think all this represents a development of U.S. involvement and a change in the nature of U.S. involvement in the Middle East from 56 to now. One can't help wondering whether there's a parallel between what might have happened if we'd succeeded in the Gulf, in the canal, rather, in 56. And what's happened over Kuwait? Kuwait's been recovered, all right, the canal might have been recovered, but then what? It was assumed that Nasser would fall. It was assumed that Saddam would fall, but he hasn't.
And neither did Nasser.
Neither did Nasser. There was involvement, there would have been involvement on the canal, we'd have been sitting on the canal, which we did have, but it would then be a reversal to the military occupation of the canal zone. We're now in a position in the Middle East that we've got forces there which enables us to have strong influence. But what happens? Do we have to retain them there all the time? There's a similar situation there. One also wonders what would have happened if the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait had occurred 18 months or 2 years later. If it had occurred in 1992, American policy might conceivably have been had their own impediment.
Because of the election, you mean?
Because of the election, yeah.
Which is a question I did not ask you earlier. It is sometimes suggested that in 1956, the Israelis have suggested that the British calculated that Eisenhower would not take any forceful action to prevent military action by the British and French because of concern for the American election that was coming up. Was this really, as far as you know?
The Israelis say that the British thought that Eisenhower would not take...
That he would be passive because he'd be too preoccupied with the election and that therefore you didn't need to worry about the American.
I believe that was the French view. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I heard that the French expressed that view at the time. I do not believe that was the British view. I think that Eden took the view that he knew his friend Ike, mm-hmm. and his friend Ike would not let him down. The idea of independent British action, in spite of whatever preoccupation was going on in Washington, would surely not be disowned by my friend Ike.
Thank you very, very much. I'll stop there. I've taken...